Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
You want, as a contractor, to obligate your subcontractors to the widest possible scope of work so that you minimize a claim for a change order. So they come back to you and say, no, that wasn't in my price. I never included that in my scope. You want language in the contract that you can point to and say, it doesn't matter. You agreed to absorb all of that risk of things that either you knew or should have known. As a sub, it's the converse. You want to be able to say, I'm only going to do this. You want me to do anything more than this, it's going to be a change order. So that is the battle that happens in the contract. And that's probably one of the more significant issues that gets negotiated in the contract. So a common description that exists in most contracts looks like this. The furnishing and performance of any and all labor and materials by the subcontractor, which is within the scope of the contract documents. See how it says contract documents in capitals, right? So that's referencing all of the documents, including those that are incorporated. Or which can be, and here is the language that is heavily, heavily litigated, these two words, reasonably inferred from the general scope of the contract documents. So what does that mean? That means as a sub, you're saying, I'm giving you a price for what I think is in the contract, for all of the things that may be referenced in all of the contract documents that I may not have even seen, plus anything that's reasonably inferable from that. I mean, that's about as broad as it gets. From a contractor's perspective, that's what you want. You want to be able to say, yeah, it wasn't really in the plans, but you know what? You should have known that it was in the plans. So what was it? We represent an owner. Was it an owner? It was an owner of a school that was building an addition to a school. And they hired the architect and engineer and the plans, gave it to the contractor. And the owner has this language, reasonably inferable, which is pretty standard, by the way, in their contract. And it turns out that in all of the plans, there is no reference at all to thermostats in any of the classrooms. Now think about that, right? That means that the architect missed it, the mechanical engineer missed it, the electrical engineer missed it. Exactly. The contractor, when he looked at it, didn't call it out and say, wait a second, how are you going to change the temperature in all these rooms? There's no thermostats. So we argued, the owner, we're not responsible for this. You should have known, because it's reasonably inferable that if you have an air conditioner, you need to have a thermostat. So understand this reasonably inferable language is kind of this catch-all that can really expand the scope of a contract. And again, I would tell you, it's pretty common. It exists in most contracts we see. So as a sub, you want to try to limit the scope of your contract. You want to say something like, only those items specifically listed within its proposed scope of work shall be included in the work. So again, it's this constant back and forth that we're going to see throughout the day of push and pull between the sub and the contractor. So let's keep going. There are certain issues that are constantly, I mean, there's probably a list in your specific business where you can say, you know, these items are absolutely not in my price, and these items are. And as a contractor, you can say, I expect all of these things to be in your price. Those are the types of things that, based on your knowledge and experience, you should include automatically in your contract so there's no misunderstanding. So some of the ones we see all the time are ceiling pipe penetrations, any type of fire safing or fire stopping. Patching and painting. I mean, that's a big one, right? So you're obligated as a sub to patch and paint. If you're expecting not to have to patch and paint, then you need to make sure you exclude that. Temporary facilities, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. temporary electric, temporary water, or any other utilities you need? Is that part of the contract or not part of the contract? On-site storage, parking. Parking has become a huge problem. You know, where are you gonna, where are your men that are gonna show up on the site? Where are they gonna, they're gonna park? You need to have that clarified in your contract. Hoisting, if you do any type of vertical construction, who's gonna get your stuff off the ground into the building? Cleanup and trash removal. We'll talk about that too. Lighting, if there's any lighting that's needed, so you may be working around the clock, do you have to bring your own lights? Is the contractor gonna provide lighting? Security of tools or materials stored or installed. Most general contract contracts say that the subcontractor is gonna be, and we're gonna talk about this as well, is responsible for the security and protection of all of their tools, equipment, materials stored, and materials that are installed. If you're the sub, do you understand that? Do you understand what that risk means? That means that if you bring 4 pallets of tile and you put it on the job site and it disappears, right? Your contract says that you're responsible. Now you got to get that material again. So you need to understand. And you may say, well, I have insurance for that. But do you want to make an insurance claim? How much is your deductible? How fast is the insurance company going to react? And I have the answer, very, very slowly, right? So you're still going to have to come out of pocket again for that material. We had a client who was a mechanical contractor, and he did all of the copper pipe in the building. And that copper pipe got stolen over a long weekend, all ripped out. So he had to replace it all. It took the insurance company 8 months to write him a check for the material that was stolen. So he got paid, but that's a long time to cash flow all of the material that got stolen from the job. So you need to understand those risks.
This episode is brought to you by the Miami Construction Forum. This invitation-only group of construction professionals of all sizes and trades meets monthly for an informal lunch-and-learn session on current topics of interest, from getting paid and safety to bonding and insurance. To see the upcoming topics and request your invitation, visit MiamiConstructionForum.com.
Let's talk about inconsistencies in the contract documents. So here's a provision that benefits the contractor. In the event that portions of the contract documents are inconsistent, the provision imposing the most stringent standard, e.g. the highest quality, greatest quantity, shall control. Again, this is more, and you're going to see this throughout the day, vague language that imposes, when in doubt, the greatest standard on the sub. And the sub needs to be aware of those provisions so that they can push back. So think about this. If you are, so the classic example of this is the fire sprinkler, the fire protection contractor in a building, right? So plans say certain number of strobes, certain number of sprinkler heads, and then the fire marshal comes in and says, No, we need 7 more here, 24 more there. And the contractor's gonna say, hey, that was your job. You know, you were supposed to give me a whatever it took to get this thing passed. So if you need to provide more, then that's your responsibility. Or maybe one of your contract says you're gonna provide 37 strobes and the plans call for 60. You know, this would be an example of it saying, we have a conflict, whatever's the higher is gonna govern. So this becomes especially dangerous as a sub if you are not looking at all of the documents that make up your contract. So if there's any inconsistency, you own the one that costs you more money. So other little things where this comes up, you know, mechanical contractors, you spec in your quote, a lower quality unit, maybe that's a ream, right? But there's a note in the plans and it calls for train, right? Now you've just bought the owner train units at a ream price. So if you're not careful, this language is gonna trip you up. Now you wanna try to limit that as a sub, and you could say something like, subcontractor is not responsible for missing or conflicting information or for the constructability, performance, or use of the project. Again, language that says, hey, I'm only gonna build what I tell you I'm gonna build. I'm not gonna build a project that's gonna meet certain requirements. I'm just gonna do what's in the plans that I've told you are within my scope of work. There's a standard provision that exists in again, most contracts, and it requires that the subcontractor verify that they've been to the site, they understand the working conditions, and that their price and the schedule can be achieved within those confines. So it looks something like this. Subcontractor represents and agrees that it has examined and understands the contract documents, including the schedule, has investigated the nature and condition of the project site and locality, has familiarized itself with the conditions affecting the difficulty of the work, and has entered into the subcontract based upon its own examination, investigation, and evaluation, and not in reliance upon representations or information from the contractor. That's pretty clear, and I would tell you that exists in almost every contract that we see. So to come back to the contractor later and say, the site conditions were not what I expected. The city isn't approving things, or they're not giving us inspections as quickly as we anticipated. None of those arguments are going to carry any weight in light of a provision that looks like this, because you as a sub have said, I own it all. All the risk associated with this job, this schedule, the weather, it's all mine. Again, a very dangerous provision that exists in most contracts. So as a subcontractor, what do you do? So when you see this provision, how do you deal with it when you're negotiating your contract? So you could say something like, subcontractor disclaims responsibility for conditions which are hidden or otherwise not reasonably discoverable by the subcontractor. Again, pushing back on the contractor, saying, I've given you a price based on what I understand to be the scope of work, and I can't guarantee all of the things that I don't know about. Let's take a minute and at least let me explain kind of bigger picture about some of this. When you sit down to negotiate a contract with the other side, many of the things that I'm telling you from the subcontractor's perspective, I think you would understand are pretty reasonable. So the key is to try in your negotiations to explain to the contractor what it is that you can reasonably control. And that's the reason that you're making the changes to their contract. So when you negotiate, you want to try to sound and act reasonably in your request, because by doing that, it increases the likelihood that the other side is going to agree to your changes. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, when you're negotiating, make sure that you actually are negotiating with the person that is going to sign the document and make the decision. Because let me tell you, what will likely happen if that's not the case. You meet with someone who has the authority to negotiate, but not the authority to sign. You come across as reasonable, you make your changes, he or she agrees that those changes are reasonable, you leave, he or she takes it to their supervisor who has to sign, and the supervisor behind that desk says, I don't care, we're not taking this risk. So all of the effort that you have undertaken to explain your position and minimize your risk goes out the window, because now you're not dealing with someone that has the authority to resolve these issues in the negotiation. So in a nice way, you need to try to figure out if the person you're dealing with has the authority to accept your changes and sign on the dotted line, so that you don't waste your time or any effort associated with negotiating with someone that can't help you.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forums on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.